Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. When I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything alright.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Star Seed Gem Studios, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. Tonight's guest is Dr. Hillary S. Webb, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And as usual, I see you had were busy with cutting out a few articles and papers. The one that struck my eye was it was the United States Senator.
I've got to give a shout out to Veronica, who actually emailed this to us or sent it to us on Facebook. So thank you, Veronica, for finding things for us to read and know about. But, yeah, this is about a senator who recently had, last year he had a stroke, and he was gone from Washington, and he's returned today. But after suffering this major stroke, he said he saw angels while recovering in the hospital.
Yeah, and, you know, what struck me about it, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, he describes not really being sure whether it was a dream or whether it was a near-death experience, but he was clear on what he did see and the angels. And the first thing that comes to mind is, well, he's a United States Senator, so just the fact that he talked about that publicly is meaningful, because many people would keep that a secret. But I think as we've discussed before, we're living at a time now where it seems that more and more people, even high-profile people, are not keeping their experiences to themselves. I mean,
I think that's part of the shift. Is we're going through this change of our perspective on life and what it means and what's important and what's not important. And when you look at the state of the physical world, you say there's got to be some meaning in all of this. So when you have an experience like this, where he did say that he saw the angels at the foot of the bed, and that's a very common thing. I'm sure he doesn't know it's a common thing, but it's a common thing.
He also said, did they say that he had more to do, or it was time to come back, or I think there was something along those lines.
Yeah, he said the angels appeared at the foot of his bed and asked if he wanted to come with them.
So they were giving him
an option. So apparently he's completed what it is that he's come here to do spiritually, but maybe not in Washington. So his response was, no, I'll hold off. And that's a direct quote.
That's interesting, because the vast majority of people that we talk about that have near-death experiences, they're given that choice, and they're told, despite the fact that they may want to continue to the other realm, they're told that they have to come back.
Well, they're not given the choice. That's the point. They're told have to go back.
Right. So what does it mean when you're given a choice? Like you said,
That whatever it was that you agreed to play a role in your incarnation here, You've done that. You've fulfilled that promise to your soul.
So from the spiritual perspective, then what's the point of remaining in the physical?
Because he's not a spiritual person. He's a religious person, so he doesn't understand that perspective that we've all been studying. So to him, this was a religious experience, and he's going to make it into that because he's a religious person, and that's his cultural orientation, and that's what people do. And you want to know something? If that makes him a better person, fine.
Yeah. Well, also the fact that, well, he immediately saw people standing at the foot of his bed. I shouldn't say people. He saw entities, you know, which he interpreted these entities in spirit form to be angels. Another person may have interpreted, may have recognized somebody from that they once knew in the physical that passed on. It could have been visitors from that were once in the physical. And, of course, maybe they were angels. I mean, the theory behind angels is that they were beings that never incarnated, that they were always remained, you know, in the spirit realm. So, I mean, we'll never know. But it's certainly interesting how people interpret these experiences, as you say, based upon their own culture and society and religion and so forth. I often wonder, you know, if I had such an experience, how I would interpret, you know, such
things. Well, I think there's a certain amount of interpretation, and I also think there's a certain amount of control is not really the best word for this, that's imparted into the visit from the other side. So if the entities decided that he needed to be communicated with to be given this choice of whether or not to return or go back, because they are aware, soul-wise, of his cultural orientation here in the physical world, to show him anything other than an angel would not have accomplished the same thing.
Right, yeah, I understand. I'm putting it in this frame of reference. So you have another newspaper clipping there. How do I enroll in that school for profit?
It's cool. I thought that this was the coolest.
Is that for real, or is
it? Well, it is, but again, it's a product of cultural orientation and religion, because this school for profits was formed in Tel Aviv in Israel, and it really is, when you read this article and you understand what they're doing, they're basically doing the same thing that spirit circles do here. They're getting together and they're opening it up, and they're prophets. They're getting information from the other side, the same way mediums would do it or psychics would do it, but they're calling themselves prophets.
Right. So, I mean, most people, when they hear the prophet, they immediately think of a prophet in religious terms.
Right.
You know, and then how dare you blasphemize, right? So, yeah, but
Where religious control has come in, because
right.
Before we had organized religion, everybody was a prophet. Everybody was talking to the other side. Everybody was gleaning information and knowing how to organize their lives. Then you have organized religion that says, no, only the priests and the higher-ups can talk to those on the other side. Everybody else has to sit back. And they're saying, no, prophets are not designated people. Anybody can do this, and we should all be doing this. So basically, they're kind of saying the same thing we are, but they're doing it from a religious perspective.
What were they doing in these so-called classes? I mean, are they they're practicing things like meditation and
communing? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Meditation, music. If you take a look at the picture they took of this group, they've got guitars. They've got anything to raise their vibratory selves, so that they can open up more and get more information. And it's all the same stuff we've been talking about and reading and researching. And
yeah, well, we're gonna go to our break, and our guest, as you mentioned, Dr. Hillary Webb, spent a lot of time with shamans, and she did a lot of exploration. So she will have some insights into these things, I'm sure. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770. 7770.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Sponsor is Star Seed Gems Studios, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. Bob?
And, Dr. Hillary Webb is the former managing editor of Anthropology of Consciousness, the peer-reviewed journal of the Society for the Anthropology of Consciousness. She's also the former research director at the Monroe Institute. She received her undergraduate degree in journalism from New York University. She went on to earn a master's in consciousness studies from Goddard College, and her PhD is in psychology from Saybrook University. She's the author of Exploring Shamanism, Traveling Between the Worlds, Conversations with Contemporary Shamans, and her latest book is the Yanatin and Massantin in the Andean World, Complementary Dualism in Modern Peru. Welcome, Dr. Webb.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. You know, the title of your new book, it sounds like a very scholarly work, and it might scare some people off, but really when you get down to it, it's ultimately a book about self-exploration and a search for meaning, is it not?
It is, and it's true. The title, I think, sounds a little ominous, and it's full of words that, you know, people haven't heard before. But really, it started off, Yanatin and Massantin in the Andean World began as my doctoral dissertation. And I had intended to make it a scholarly study, but due to some of the, you know, things I found out when I was in Peru studying this concept of Yanantin or complementary opposites, it really turned into a very personal journey. And so the book both looks at some of the more intellectual aspects of this idea, but also looks at my personal journey and how I came to integrate this idea of complementary opposites.
Yeah, definitely, and that's what I enjoyed reading is your personal exploration. It made me think back to, I'll be dating myself, but the remember there was an old show with, I guess it was Kung Fu with Grasshopper, you know, and some of your narrative in the book of, you know, meeting with these extraordinary people, these shamans, and you were seeking to learn the definition of Yanantin, and you were told things like, you know, it can't be defined or it has millions of meanings. And is that the way that the great shamans work? I mean, they kind of prod you to find the answers yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's, you know, here in the Western world, you have this tendency to want real, objective, defined knowledge. So when we want to know something, we want to know how do you define it. And in doing that, we kind of freeze concepts. We will often sort of generalize and ultimate certain ideas. You know, in contrast, the shamans that I worked with in Peru to understand this idea really, you know, were reluctant. They did give me some sort of intellectualized definitions, but really said, you know, if you want to understand this, you have to have a full embodied experience of it. You have to know it for yourself in your own life rather than just having it, you know, sort of these sterile definitions.
Mm. So what did you learn? I mean, how would you define Yanantin? What's your meaning?
Yeah. Well, probably the easiest way to sum it up, Yanantin means complementary opposites in the indigenous Peruvian language. And essentially, the way I describe it, here in the Western world, we have this tendency to see the opposites of existence, whether that's male or female, self, other, inner, outer, light, dark. We see them as being antagonistic to one another, as being in this perpetual battle for dominance. And this is part of our Western intellectual, philosophical inheritance, basically. In contrast, in the indigenous Andean worldview, and actually in many indigenous cultures, the world is seen and the opposites are seen as being engaged in a dance. So rather than battling one another, they're in this continual interchange, and you can't have one without the other because both inform and support the other. So really, my work with Yanantin and the work with the shamans that I did to research this book was really about learning, you know, as a Westerner coming from this particular battle mentality, what does it take for me to make the shift from a battle mentality to a dance mentality? And that's, you know, in the book I go through different polarities, male and female, inner and outer, life and death, good and evil, and, you know, share some of my experiences, share some of my dialogues with the shamans about what that really means and how we can see the world much more, I would say elegantly, in a much more relaxed, enjoyable way if we engage with it on this, with this metaphor of being a dance.
Mm. I know that you bring out that in Andean wisdom, they say that wisdom is gained by, wisdom was based in experience, you know, versus the Western view that it's based in thought. So is that the same thing as saying that maybe we should stop trying to analyze everything that we do and be in the moment?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have no problem with analyzing. I enjoy analyzing. I enjoy that sort of thinking aspect of it. In fact, one of my primary participants said, you know, Hillary, you know, teaching you how to not think, how to not think is like teaching a fish how to not swim. And, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with the intellectualizing and the analyzing, but what I really love is bringing in that personal aspect of it and seeing, okay, you know, for me, intellectual is great, but then how do you apply it to your own life, and how do other people take that and apply it to their lives? Because for me, practical knowledge is as important as intellectual knowledge.
Mm. You know, in following your experiences and your journey and your exploration, I was interested to see what you were going to finally arrive at, and it's a hard concept. You know, at the end, it ultimately you gain wisdom by arriving at nothingness. I mean, you know, as a trained academic, was that a hard concept for you to grasp?
It was kind of. I mean, you know, one of the things that motivates me, you know, as an academic and as a person on, you know, I think a spiritual path and a path of understanding the world and myself, it's the questions that drive me, and it's and that's why I love research. It's exciting to go seek an answer and that process and that journey. But really, in the last chapter of the book, not to give away a spoiler, it really comes down to letting go of seeking answers. And that's fine, and that journey is great, because that journey gets you to realize that, in the end, it doesn't matter. It's all, you know, a kind of a nothingness, and that seeking is good in and of itself. But in the end, there is nothing to seek. And I think that's probably, you know, the wisdom of many different spiritual traditions around the world.
Yeah, and in your participation, which I'd like to get into a little bit, I mean, part of the ritual that went on there with, you know, or ceremony involved, you know, their ancient medicine. And I guess, I don't know if you went there with the intention of taking part in ceremony, but I guess it became clear that you needed to participate, you know, to fully understand. Were you apprehensive at all about losing control?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the very first chapter. I meet with Amado, who's my primary participant, and, you know, being that dutiful PhD student, I sit down with my notebook and I say, you know, can you define Yanantine? And he sort of smiled and said, you know, I can, but you really need to download it from the cosmos. And, of course, that phrase really stuck with me. And what he was suggesting was that, you know, in addition to, you know, whatever definitions I might want to uncover, he was suggesting that I go into ceremony with him and another shaman and take the San Pedro cactus drink. San Pedro is a mescaline cactus. And, you know, the first few chapters of the book is really a lot about me going through my kind of mental Western wrangling about what does it mean to take part in this kind of ceremony using a hallucinogenic substance, and really realizing the fear that I had of my own, you know, what I might discover in my own mind, and, you know, sort of that fear was masquerading as scholarly doubt that any information could be found in that way. And then in the fifth chapter is the first San Pedro experience I had, in which I really had this just beautiful experience of understanding through this plant medicine just what it is to feel connected to Yanantine in this way, to be in that kind of neutral zone where I don't have to choose between the opposites, where they both have weight, where they both have meaning, where they both have significance. And, you know, for that, I'm really grateful that I did engage a ceremony with them, because it really changed everything.
Well, at the beginning, I guess things were very subtle. I mean, it didn't exactly like hit you like a ton of bricks, but I know that you described at one point, it was like, I think you said it was like having a thousand dreams that you had once had but forgot suddenly returned to you all at once. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, you know, the way the ceremony worked is four of us, we went up to the top of this mountain, and we engaged in the ceremony, had a couple glasses of the San Pedro medicine, went to sleep, or at least lay down in our sleeping bags to wait for the medicine to take effect. And then I did have this very, you know, I think I slept a little bit, and then this waking up, and it was as if my brain had sort of opened up and my mind had opened up, and having this feeling of many things that I had forgotten in my life coming back to me all at once, and sort of being in that place where there's so much coming at you that you can't really articulate it, but it's this beautiful awareness of every dream that you've ever had that was a beautiful dream just returning to you, and what a gift those dreams were. And then I talk about in the book this experience that I had that night looking up at the stars and seeing the stars move and dance. And part of my logical voice saying, no, that can't be. That's part of the San Pedro illusion. The stars don't move. They don't dance. But then having another part of my mind say, but look, they are dancing. They are. And so it was this, they don't move, they don't move, they do move, they don't move, they do move, they don't move, until I reached this state in which I could accept that stars both move and don't move all at the same time. And that was kind of that Yanantian experience of, hey, I get to have it both ways. Isn't that cool?
Right. So that's really where you learn the true meaning of Yanantian, the complementary contradictions, right? Complementary
right.
opposites. You know,
yeah.
I find it interesting when you have an experience like that and you have these moments of tremendous clarity, which is not what you would expect or the average person would expect if you're taking a psychoactive drug. You know, I would think that it's hallucinatory, so things would be all confused. But yet, many times you have tremendous insights. So what you're describing is very clear thinking.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the distinctions between, say, you know, a young person taking a hallucinogen on a Friday night just because they're bored and somebody going into ceremony with the same substance with some shamans is that in a ceremony there's a real, an intent is placed, and that intent is the arrow that takes you through the entire ceremony. It's that idea that you follow. So you really are able to... it's called, you know, psycho-integrate what you get from that experience rather than just having it a bunch of sort of chaotic, meaningless weirdness. A situation is created where you really can bring it back. So it's not just about being in the state and the place of the hallucinogenic medicine. It's being in that state, learning these lessons, and then being able to bring them to your daily life. And that's, I think, one of the beauties of working with the shamans in this way.
Yeah, you know, and getting into that state where you can, you know, visit or become part of other realms of consciousness. Do you think? I mean, we've talked to people such as Rick Strassman with the DMT molecule and so forth, and it was always to me, I found it very curious that there are these substances that we all have, naturally occurring substances in our bodies, not only in human form, but in plants and in everything in our universe. Why, if we're part of this design, why would we all have a naturally occurring so-called hallucinatory substance in our bodies? Maybe, do you ever think that maybe it's part of a purpose and we're supposed to learn how to activate these molecules to gain insights from other realms?
Yeah, I mean, I like to think that. At least I like to think, you know, I think what you're referring to is this idea that DMT is endogenous within the brain, so the brain actually creates a certain amount of DMT. And the
right.
question is, you know, why does it and what do we do with it? And there's some speculation that it has to do with dreaming. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be wonderful to find ways of accessing, you know, even without taking any substance, to be able to access those realms where you can have non-ordinary experiences and have them in a way that, I don't know if I want to use the word controlled, because controlled sort of implies you're controlling the experience, but I think, you know, if somebody isn't prepared for this experience to take them over, then it can have a detrimental effect, as opposed to being ready, being in a situation where, you know, you can have a really positive experience. But I do find that whole thing fascinating, and which is why I'm really, you know, beyond the San Pedro experience, one of the things I'm personally interested in is non-ordinary experiences of all kinds, you know, whether that's through psychedelics or whether it's through drumming or shamanic journeying or dancing or whatever takes us, you know, into a neutral zone where we can kind of recreate the world in a new way and we can see more of the world than we do in an ordinary state of consciousness.
Yeah, you devote a good part of the book or a few chapters to their concept of the Zandian wisdom and the concept of their concept of death. At one point, you're told that, well, the explanation is given that, let's say, if the universe determines that someone's not supposed to die, then that person can't be taken, you know. But you know, they point out that if somebody's murdered, it's the universal energy that's used to liberate that person from their physical limitations. So does that sort of fit in with the concept of reincarnation, that we choose our roles and purposes in the physical to sort of balance things out? I mean, the Andeans believe in karma.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because I asked them that question. There is a certain amount of belief in reincarnation. It's a little different than I think most of us have an understanding of reincarnation as seen through the Eastern traditions. So the way I understand it is that they do believe that we come into this life with a certain mission. And, you know, one of my questions to Amado was, okay, so what happens if you don't complete your mission? And he looked at me, he goes, but you will. And I said, but what if you don't? He goes, but you will. And, you know, so it's not this, it's somehow it's this, you're coming into life with this mission that you will complete. And then you will be complete. It's not a question of you might be able to complete it if you're good, and you don't complete it if you're not good, and then you have to start all over again. So it's reincarnation and something like karma with a kind of different twist and a different sort of
They sort of believe that we all start with a clean slate.
Yeah.
The impression that I got, yeah.
Yes.
You were told that, you know, in death, it's often hard for us to realize that we no longer have a physical body. It's a very subtle change. And when you heard that said, and I know you're familiar with a lot of the research that's going on, did you notice a similarity in some of the near-death experience accounts and channel reports? Where that's what people talk about. It's a very subtle change. Is that striking to you?
Yeah. I haven't done a lot of research into near-death experience. The thing that did click for me was the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and this idea of you go through these certain bardo states before you reach, you know, whatever the final resting place is. And these bardos are, as I understand it, part of the way in which you come to realize and accept your passing on to something new. So you go into this new state. You think you're still in the world that you're used to, and masters come little by little, and they slowly, so that you can incorporate it, so you can, you know, not be too shocked by it, explain to you and show you how you are actually dead, and that's part of that process. So again, that's not really how they look at it, but it does have some similarities to that, you know. One of my primary research participants' grandfather died during the research, and right, you know, beforehand they knew he was going to pass, and they, you know, made sure that he had plenty of food so he had energy for his journey. After he passed, they continued to dole out food for him so his spirit could, you know, still feel somewhat comfortable, like he was in comfortable surroundings. And there is a transition process for everybody, so it's not just person's dead, they're gone, we all move on. It's a transitioning process for everybody involved there.
I know that you were told that it used to be different, that communities and families were actually trained to see people after they left their physical body. You know, perhaps one day we can unlearn what we know and recognize these abilities. You think that day will come?
I think if we want to, sky's the limit. I mean, I think part of that, you know, part of that process is for the living, and part of the process is for the dead. And I think, like anything, that process is a practice. And if that is something that we want to reclaim, I think that there's no reason we can't reclaim it.
And we are talking with Dr. Hilary S. Webb. Her website, I forgot to give it before, it's her name, which is Hillary S. Webb, which is webb.com. And her latest book is Yenantin and the Mesintin in the Andean World. We're going to go to a break, and we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about the book, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed gems developed by the parents of a young man who passed away are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Hilary Webb. The show is sponsored by Starseed Gem Studios, and they can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. We'd also like to welcome our new members for 2013 so far. We have Alan Ross Huguenot. Alan is the author of The Death Experience, and his website is www.afterlife.pro. Connie Martin. Connie is the co-author of Love Never Ends, and her website is www.loveneverendsbook.com and Starseed Gem Studios. Starseed Gem Studio was the proud sponsor of the 2012 annual Afterlife Conference in Phoenix, Arizona this past November. They can be found on the web at www.starseedgems.com. And before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Bob, did you know that there are three ways to show us that you like Signs of Life Radio?
Well, please tell me.
Well, the first one is you could go to Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and you could like us. The second is you can use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space where you can add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And I want to add our apologies because this week that button is not working. So hold out for next week to make your donation. And the third is remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you will need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,000 online stores like Expedia, Fandango, Nordstrom, Old Navy, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. We have a few upcoming events. You can check our website and make your reservations for Dessert and Discarnates, an evening of just 12 attendees and one medium and delicious desserts. We have Night of Mediums coming up in April, where that's our annual fundraiser, and there will be tables of 12 with one medium seated at each table after you devour a scrumptious dinner. And fourth coming up is our Grief Transformation Weekend in Chester, Connecticut, and that's the weekend of July 26th through 28th. And I am done. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, and we are back with Dr. Hillary Webb. You know, Dr. Webb, I mentioned at the top of the show that one of your prior books was Traveling Between the Worlds, which was a book about conversations that you had with contemporary shamans. And there is one account that you had from there that stuck with me, and I've repeated it countless times to so many people. And you were interviewing one of these shamans, and she was talking about how we tend to think of spirit as having higher knowledge and being separate from those of us in the physical. And what she said we should do is make believe we're all in a stadium, you know, watching a sporting event. You know, if you're sitting on the ground level, you could see all the expressions on the players' faces, and you can hear the grunts and the sounds. But it's not until you sit at the very top of the stadium that you can see the overall patterns. And I thought that was such a wonderful analogy, and I must give you and credit. And I don't know, unfortunately, I don't recall who the shaman was, but that must have been an experience talking to so many people with so much wisdom and researching that book.
It really was. I think the shaman that said that was Evelyn Rysdyke, who's actually coming out with a wonderful new book.
Oh, okay.
Traveling Between the Worlds for me was just, it was my second book, but in some ways it felt like the first. It was, boy, what an honor to get to sit down and talk with these, you know, a couple dozen really profound, deep thinkers who really, changed, the way I look at the world. And each interview was really, for me, pulling back the blinders a little bit, because each one just had a little nugget that spoke to me. So I feel very grateful for that whole experience working with them. And that quote, the stadium analogy, yeah, I think about that a lot too. And I actually use that when I'm talking about some of the work I did down in Peru. You know, you were talking earlier about the murderer, you know, and if somebody, you know, if a murderer is going to murder somebody, they will, and if they're not meant to, they won't. And it can kind of come across sometimes, you know, when I'm explaining the distinction between good and evil in the Andean perspective as kind of a, they let everything be as it will be, and it's, you know, one of my questions to them was, you know, what do you do if you see something that is evil or wrong, or you see somebody getting hurt, would you help them? And they looked at me sort of stunned and said, yes, of course we would, you know, in a moment. But, you know, we don't know what's right and wrong. So we need to zoom out in that sort of spirit, top of the stadium perception, and see what all the players are doing, rather than, you know, often in an ordinary state of consciousness, we're sort of like right on the stadium floor and we're being very directed by our passions. So one of the things I really admire about the people that I worked with in Peru is they have this wonderful ability to jump back and forth between perceptual states, whether that's at the top of the stadium, in the middle of the stadium, right up on the field. And I think that's part of the sanity of the way they look at the world, is being able to see it both through passion and emotion and wanting to work for what they feel is right, but also being able to zoom out and say, okay, can I always know what's right, and sort of having more context for it.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting when you question them about how they would react to certain situations, you know, with the knowledge that they have, and you asked about, you know, if you, would you stop somebody from doing evil? I mean, they also saw that, I mean, you mentioned they saw death as a great transformer rather than, you know, stealing your life from you. So I know you questioned whether or not the Andean shamans, do they grieve when their loved ones pass? So what did they tell you about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, one of my participants' grandfather died when he was there, and he's telling me the story, and he burst into tears. He was very sad and missed his grandfather very much, which, you know, goes to show, you know, it's the, embracing this complementary perspective does not mean that we lose our emotions, that we lose our passions, that we lose our sense of directedness. You know, we lose somebody and we grieve, of course. They grieve, we grieve, we all grieve, because that's part of being human, is missing the people who are no longer with us. And also then zooming back and saying, okay, you know, what's beyond the grief, and how can I turn this grief into something beautiful and profound, and what, how can I work with this idea? Yeah, it's one of the things I say over and over again is this idea of Yanantin is not necessarily a utopia. It's not about striving for a state of mind or a state of being in which you are happy, blissful every second of the day. It's looking at those moments of tension and grief, or tension that is passion, and working with it as a dance, again, whether it's grief or joy, dancing with that emotion rather than fighting it.
Mm. I know, even in healing aspects, I know you talked with a bunch of healers, and I mean, they told you that, you know, tension was not necessarily a negative thing. So I guess it's all about balance, right?
I mean, right. One of the metaphors I use is you take a tango, a pair of couple who are dancing the tango. Now, the tension in the tango, that passion, that moments where you don't know if they're going to rip each other's eyes out or drop to the floor and make love, is what creates the beauty of the dance. So without that tension, there is no dance. There is no beautiful work of art. So looking at the tension in that light for me has been very, very helpful.
Mm. Well, I guess that's why a lot of people, you know, question when they hear these accounts from near-death experiences of this kind of blissful realm of existence. People often ask, well, why do we have to go through this physical? You know, why not? Are we not just able to either exist in these other realms or travel to these other realms on a regular basis? But I guess it's the same answer. I mean, it's part of the dance, right? You can't recognize.
Right.
Can't recognize the bliss without having some of the some of the torture, so to speak.
It's true. I always think of that line from The Matrix. How does it go? It's, you know, they're talking, the sort of the bad guy is talking to the good guy about how, well, we first program humans to have absolute bliss, but you know what? You rejected that program because you couldn't just have bliss. And I do wonder, I think that there is something about having the opposites that is meaningful to us, that helps us grow, it helps us transform, it helps us become the best people that we can be, both for ourselves and with each other, and it's all part of the journey. You know, not to sound too cliche, but it is the fire that forges us.
What do you think they meant when they said that in ancient cultures, people prepared their whole lives for death? It's always an unusual concept when you say, you know, how do you prepare for death? I mean, how do you spend your lives preparing for it?
Yeah.
I mean, is that,
well,
is it,
you know,
all part,
yeah,
of it?
Good question. I mean, I think when they were talking about that, they had mentioned the people that sort of sacrificed themselves to the gods. And I think when you don't fear death, you know, death takes on a different context, and when death is really accepted as a part of life, it actually becomes a wonderful thing to rub up against. I mean, when you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to die, that's just how it is, and that's okay, so what do I want to do with my life? What is the thing that will define my life in the face of death? And I think that's probably partly what it was how do I be... you know, again, sounds kind of cliche, but how do I be a warrior within the context of my own life? How do I live life in a way that is truly authentically mine and me and the reason that I came here, the thing that I came here to do? Someday I will die, so I need to do it.
One thing that I really, well, I know we're coming to a close, but the underlying theme in this book is that the shamans they counsel that it's not so much you exploring outer worlds and, you know, going out there. So I guess the message is that instead of looking outwardly, we should be looking inwardly. I mean, is that where the answers are found? I mean, when you do a ceremony, I mean, you're looking within. Do you think of it that way, looking within rather than looking without?
I actually see it as both.
I think
really the message that I got from them was it's both inner and outer. It's sort of both and. It's that dance between perceptual states that I was talking about before. You know, certainly, you know, we always want to look at the relationship that we have with ourselves and the dance with ourselves. And then how is that dance with ourselves manifesting outward, with the dance with our spouse or, you know, the person we talk to in the line at the grocery store, or, you know, between nations, between tribes, you name it. I think inner and outer are always dancing together, always informing one another, and it's just kind of, you know, bouncing back and forth between those two states. I think that, for me, was the lesson of pretty much everything having to do with Yanantin.
And we have been talking with Dr. Hilary Webb. Her website is hilarysweb.com. The book is Yanantin and Misintin in the Andean World, Complementary Dualism in Modern Peru. So if you want to learn more about that great dance of life and death, pick it up. And you could also learn a lot more about Dr. Webb's work on her website, as I mentioned, hilarysweb.com. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you'll join us again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks. Take care. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Johanna Suchow, Laura Lynn Jackson, Francis Mastrocco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Jerry Diana, Barbara Russell, Alex, Nancy Scheel, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Barron, Eileen LaFlada, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Patillo, Glenna Irwin, Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, Flora Prisco, Tracy Lee Nash, and Marianne Pierschka. And we now ask us all to join in the Global Peace Prayer. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And that's the global synchronized prayer that's being advocated by Dr. Claude Swanson. And you can find more about that on his website at synchronizeduniverse.com. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.